brought up the ratcheting effects.
And I did mention it earlier.
Yeah, the overreach and compromise cycles are how the ratchet is turned. Talked past the point, but the pole that keeps the ratchet in place are people like James Lindsay, who declare every movement of the ratchet throughout the 50s through the 90s as part of the sacred pantheon of liberal progress. We're going to read a bit from... Oh God, it's got such a terrible title.
Cynical Theories, How Activist Scholarship Made Everything About Race, Gender and Identity and Why This Harms Everybody.
But here's the first quote. I believe this is from page 233. And we'll read a bit more around it as well, because I have it up here. But do you want to read this one?
Yeah, I can do. When the liberal left explicitly challenged all of this, and advocated the view that people should not be evaluated.
Bless you.
Excuse me. Evaluated by their race, sex, or sexuality, it held a convincing moral high ground over right-wing elements who argued that they should. Liberals, spearheaded by the civil rights movement, liberal feminism, and gay pride, overwhelmingly won this battle of ideas in the second half of the 20th century and attained legal equality on the grounds of race, gender, and sexuality. Term liberal feminism on its own just gives it all away, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So successful were they that by the end of the first decade of the 21st century, mainstream conservatives had largely accepted this too. The socially or religiously conservative elements who still believe that women, black people, or gay people should be restricted to certain roles in life or denied equal rights became recognized as holding an extremist, far right position and could accept reputational damage in a liberal society.
He's saying that's a good thing, by the way.
Oh, no, I'm well aware.
But this is why we tell you ad infinitum that people like James Lindsay and even people like Andy Ngo and all of these kind of skeptosphere liberal atheists.
Should we do a quick...
are your enemy.
Yeah. You could do an honest reading of this. Communists.
Yeah.
At the behest of international finance and otherwise Machiavellian actors, reorientated society as we know it through the length of the 20th century, so much so that even your mum or dad might be considered a racist or a criminal for saying things that were normal 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And he's saying, and here's why that's
and here's why that's a good thing.
James Lindsay, enemy of the regime people.
Yes. This dramatic and rapid change in society's conception of gender roles, this is the rest of the quote, of course,
yeah.
Race relations and sexual freedom is still very fragile and new, however. Liberal feminists had to put a lot of work into convincing society that women are as intellectually rigorous and psychologically tough as men, and no one believes them. It took time to defeat stereotypes about women being prone to hysteria and emotional thinking, being too sensitive to cope in the public sphere and in need of protecting from difficult ideas of people.
Cut to 3 5-foot-2 policewoman being overpowered by a 5-foot-5 Indian immigrant.
Cut to the black woman fighting in Waffle House. That's all I need. Nor did racial minorities find when they were immediately recognised by a majority white society as equally intelligent and ethical citizens, because they aren't. The narratives of colonialism and Jim Crow, which held that non-white people were unintelligent, irrational, emotionally volatile, and unscrupulous, didn't go away overnight. Indeed, they took decades. Right, I'm going to stop there.
Yeah,
because we can go. I think the rest of it's going to be the same point.
But just, oh no, here's the last quote is great here.
Can we go back up for a second? Because yeah. I think that's a very important point.
Yeah,
he's not saying that historically, or he's trying to suggest that historically, there has been no difference between men and women in capacity or intelligent.
Yes.
And the same with race.
Yes.
It is not that white people have, you know, understood reality for thousands of years and then been told otherwise and have to now accept that despite their own face. It's that the narrative of colonialism and Jim Crow, he's actually doing like the postmodern waffle.
Yes,
of
he
his
is.
Own version.
He's postmodern waffling here. He's doing exactly what he decries in, you know, whoa, hypocrisy, blah, blah, but really, really is switching between framings here.
There's similarly, LGBT people did not find immediate acceptance from mainstream society once having had their sex lives decriminalized, their gender identities legally supported, or their committed relationships recognized in marriage, Instead, they faced a lengthy cultural battle trying to convince anxious social conservatives that they had no agenda to destroy the family, heterosexuality, masculinity, or femininity.
It's so ironic in a book that's supposed to be about not these things. That is the framework. This is what James Lindsay actually believes. It's a little bit more here. I don't know. I'll have a quick look through. I've made far too many notes for this section because I'm also writing an article about this. The aggregate beliefs of the anti-woke groups really add up to a resetting of the clock to around 1998, but with the added settled neutral civil rights policy of gay marriage, which all anti-woke people in positions of power agree should not be put away with the woke. The supposed extreme edge of the anti-woke movement wants to return to 1999, but without stapling gay marriage to the time period. The equivalent of being a Clinton Democrat, or at the most extreme a Bush Jr. neocon, is the ragged, far-right edge of a supposedly right-wing and in some circles supposedly theocratic movement. They want to return to neutral government that is objective, fair, and meritocratic. The anti-woke version is predicated on the idea of an ideal neutral point in politics. The radical centrist will tell you, in literal terms, with a laughable political pendulum swing idea. They will tell you with a straight face that the Bush Jr. administration simply swung too far right and that caused the problems of the Bush era. The Christian conservative will salivate when you describe the Bush administration to him. All of these people in some way believe in Francis Fukuyama's The End of History, that liberal democracy will bring about an ideal state of perpetual neutral government, and that stripping woke away from the current system will return to the idea of objective compromise government, and that was simply ruined by leftist overreach. I don't really have much else to add to that, but I'd like to end the stream on a quick reading of some affirmations, because there's some affirmations in this book which are quite frankly amazing. I believe this is one of the things that's currently behind a paywall.
Oh yes, these are the principles.
Here, I'll read the preamble. Just to make it easier, we'd like to close with a few examples of how you can recognize social injustice while rejecting the solutions of ideology of social justice proposals.
We hope to show that social justice issues are serious and important, but the illiberal means of addressing them are at best inadequate and at worst wrong-headed, dangerous and harmful to both people and worthy causes.
Principled opposition, example one. We affirm that racism remains a problem in society and needs to be addressed. We contend that racism, basically it's just all this formula.
We deny that racism is hard baked into society via discourses. But you just said the narrative of colonialism and Jim Crow makes white people not see black people as equal. So which fucking one is it, mate?
We contend that each individual can choose not to hold racist views and should be expected to do so. It's all like this. We affirm that sexism remains a problem in society.
That theoretical approaches to gender issues, including queer theory and intersectional feminism, which work on blank slatish theories of... See, the kind of, there's a problem with blank slate theories of sex and gender, but not problems with blank slate theories of race.
Well, this whole thing is just, we affirm that sexism remains a problem and society needs to be addressed. We affirm that discrimination and bigotry against sexual minorities remains a problem in society and requires redressing. The last one here, I just want to... I've pointed this out before, but this is the abject surrender. This is the reason that everybody does and should laugh at somebody like James Lindsay. Because he just has three affirmations here. In his, this is supposed to be principled opposition to social justice. Is we affirm that social injustices still exist and that scholarship on issues of social justice is necessary and important. We affirm the value of interdisciplinary theoretical approaches, including the study of race, gender, sexuality, culture, and the identity within the humanities. We affirm that many of the areas generated, even by the reified postmodernism of social justice scholarship, including the basic idea of intersectionality, that unique injustices can lie in intersected identities that require special consideration, are insightful and worthy of submission to the marketplace of ideas for evaluation, adaption, further study refinement, and potentially eventual application.
That fourth one there quickly as well.
Yeah.
We deny that any ideas, ideologies, or political movements can be identified as the authoritative position of any identity groups, and such groups are compromised of liberalism.
Yeah.
An idea put forward by a man called John Locke, who believed that non-whites, specifically non-Christian non-whites, could not even grasp the ethic for why you would engage in liberalism. This is an idea that still seems to hold true to me, you know, 350 years later, however far it is. James Lindsay, a liberal, does not believe in this notion. He believes that if we decided to all group together and say we speak for white people, that not only, you know, are we wrong in doing so, but we've misstepped and understood how politics even works. It's utter bloody nonsense.
Well, it's just him affirming, this is just an act of complete surrender to your opponent in a performative affirmation sense. This is like some weird New Age therapy section in which you get down on your knees and you surrender preemptively to your opponent.
Anyway, enough of this muck.
I'd like to think we've gone through this. The overarching point here, though, not to get lost in the weeds, is that all of these factions that have taken up the dialectic space are, in many cases, diametrically opposed to each other. They will not last out all of this, and in a post-woke world, they will simply default to the worst impulses of their parent movements, which are 70s feminism, the Tory Party, George W. Bush-style evangelical
and
political Christianism.
Gay technocrat.
And gay technocratic atheist fedora tipping. And that really is, one, why we don't subscribe to the quote-unquote anti-woke movement. Two, why we believe in a post-woke world it will utterly detonate. And its constituent parts will be scattered to the four winds, because anti-woke cannot exist in a post-woke world. And that really is the power of the woke being put away.